It's 1989. The U.S. Navy is secretly monitoring the world's oceans with a network of sophisticated hydrophones when they hear something. A whale calling out, but at a frequency uncommon to the fins or blues known to live nearby. This whale spoke at 52 hertz, more than twice as high as either of those species, after further identification by the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute. The legend of the loneliest whale on Earth was born. And now, 30 years later, this creature can still be heard roaming the waters of the world, a sea beast damned to wander the waves alone, singing songs too high to be heard by any mates or relatives. Today, our culture is experiencing something similar. Over 17 million children live in homes without dads. That's enough boys and girls to fill New York City two times over. And these kids are at four times the risk of poverty, seven times more likely to get pregnant as a teen. They're more likely to commit a crime, serve time in prison, and twice as likely to drop out of school. Their experience is dominated by what's called father hunger, an emotional and psychological longing manifesting as a constant sense of emptiness and insecurity. Much like the 52 hertz whale, children who go through divorce or are born out of wedlock are unmoored from the God-designed structure and safety of the family. And it's here we get a glimpse into the central importance of fathers. They ground us in reality, while our mothers nurture and comfort us, teaching us love at the expense of their own bodies. It's dad who introduces us to the world outside mom, the harsh yet beautiful world. He's the great initiator, showing and sheltering, sharing and protecting. Odds are, you like things that your dad likes. Sports teams, cars, music, movies. His religion is your religion. He's the one who's warned you about the dangers without and within. And when our fathers live up to this, we thrive. We have better emotional and social well-being. We're less likely to be mistreated by those around us. And we do better in school. And in this, we chiefly see the goodness and love of God the Father. But sadly, with fatherlessness hitting historic highs, our Heavenly Father's immeasurable mercies are forgotten by much of the world. As he often does, Pastor Doug Wilson puts his finger on the pulsing wound of our current cultural moment. From his book, Father Hunger, quote, "The fact that we live in fatherless times reveals our attitudes toward God the Father. But the solution is not to schedule numerous family retreats. No, it's to announce, preach, and declare that the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdom of God and of His Christ. Men must seek to be Christians first. If they love Jesus Christ more than mother or father or wife or sons or daughters, then they will be in fellowship with the source of all love. If they make an idol out of any one of their family members, then they are out of fellowship with the source of all love." End quote. So, Christian filmmaker, how should we speak to a culture suffering from father hunger, those calling out on a lost frequency? Do we offer them picture-perfect role models that perfectly espouse their Christian faith every chance they can get? Do our on-screen fathers need to mention their faith at all? And are there any existing examples we should emulate in our own work? You're listening to God Deserves Better, a program dedicated to equipping the saints to create like our Creator. Thanks again for joining us on God Deserves Better. I am your host, Zach Lovelace.
And I'm Jonathan Laura.
Welcome back. We have a very special episode. This is the final episode of this season of GDB. And no worries, folks. We have been renewed for season two.
Yeah.
The executives have renewed us by the skin of our teeth.
Yes.
Our studio is falling apart.
We are barely getting by. Yeah.
We have been renewed for a second season. And this is just our way of ending this season with a bang.
We're going to be doing something. It's something different we've never done before. Game.
It was season one. There's a lot that we haven't done.
Yeah.
But we're doing a game.
Yes. What we're going to be doing today, per the monologue, is drafting a team of the best dads in cinema.
Yeah. A dad draft.
And we are going off of biblical criteria. You see in movies and media, like television, all of that, dads are usually
bumbling.
Inept idiots. dumb.
Or they're like the central, if they're the main character, they're so flawed that they wouldn't be a good example.
Or they're abusive or something. You know, it's usually negative.
Yeah.
It's usually someone you don't want to emulate.
And that's actually, that makes sense for a lot of things in terms of you want to see this person change. You know, there are a lot of redemption arcs.
Especially if they're the main character.
If they're, yeah, exactly. So some of that makes sense, but those guys I wouldn't point to and say, yeah, that's a good dad.
Yeah.
You know, maybe in the last 5 minutes, they're a good dad, but not through the whole story.
Yeah. But yeah, Zach, could you actually read us through the criteria that we have for a biblical father?
Yeah, so biblical fatherhood. I'm assuming most people listening aren't fathers, but Johnny and I are, and this is something that we take very seriously, and we think you should take it seriously as well in terms of the Lord God, the Father, is known as the Father. So this is something that you as a Christian, especially as a Christian filmmaker, should really know how to articulate, should know more about, and should know how it's actually an antidote for a lot of what we are experiencing today in our society. So with that said, where should our definition and criteria come from for fathers? Well, again, God the Father created all of reality, everything that we experience. So it's clear that it should come from him. He defines everything. He's the way, the truth, and the life. The truth part being he's the standard. So he is the archetypical father. So looking to scripture, obviously, as Christian filmmakers, we should look to scripture as the end-all be-all for what it means to be a good father. And in this discussion on dads, it's important to look at four principles. And I'm pulling a lot of these from an article that we're going to link in the show notes that comes from one of my favorite books. So the article came out before one of my favorite books, which is Father Hunger. So you can tell from the opening monologue.
How many times have you read that book?
Like 3 times.
Yeah.
It's really, really good.
I've read it once. It is very good.
So these four principles, this criteria comes from that book called Father Hunger from Doug Wilson and this article which preceded the book.
And by proxy, scripture.
You know? Yes, yeah. Of course. The way that Doug articulates what scripture is saying is what's important. So number one, fathers seek their children's hearts and show them how to give their hearts, mirroring God the Father's approach to us. So him giving his heart to us, him giving Christ to us and opening himself up as well as being full of tender mercies. Every day you wake up and you have a body, even if it's in pain, that pain is to drive you to him, the greatest source of love. And we see this in Proverbs 23:26, where Solomon says, "My son, give me your heart and let your eyes observe my ways." So I think in some way that is the verse for this show. It kind of sets up everything. Number two, fathers abundantly provide. So Johnny and I were gainfully employed. Yep. We provide for our wives. And we see this come from James 1:17, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above. So again, we should be what Doug Wilson calls the giving man. So you as a father should be known primarily for your generosity. And this was one of the best things I got from Doug's Father Hunger book, that God the Father being generous, he's generous with his glory, his tasks, his protection. That's a huge one. Obviously, that resonates a lot with dads that wanting to protect your family, your children, and your wife, both spiritually and physically. He's generous with his home. That means he's leading with hospitality, and he's generous with his joy. So this idea of generosity isn't just like giving money and giving time necessarily, but all of these different things are ways that you as a father should emulate God the Father.
Also, I would point to more in the providing role is 1 Timothy 5:8, which says, if anyone does not provide for his relatives, especially for the members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever.
That's amazing. Getting at the central role
high stakes
of fathers, yes. And so the number three in the criteria, fathers are masculine and need to be to function properly because God the Father is masculine. He is the standard of masculinity. That makes sense that a derivative of him, little fathers, little f, should also be masculine. We see this in Ephesians 5:1, therefore be imitators of God as beloved children, as well as God choosing to call himself father and taking he, him pronouns upon himself. That doesn't mean he's male. That means he is masculine.
Yeah.
And that means chiefly that he would take responsibility, that he would provide, he would be generous. And then kind of rolling into the last one here, number four, biblical masculinity is the glad assumption of sacrificial responsibility, which draws parallels to Christ's sacrificial love for the church. So we see that even Paul says, this is a great mystery that I talk about, marriage between a man and a wife and Christ and the church, that marriage is a picture of Christ and the church.
Yeah.
So we see in Ephesians 6:4, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. Instead, bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Again, laying down his life and teaching them and equipping them, protecting them, both physically and spiritually. We see now our culture is kind of waking up to this idea that dads need to protect their kids even from non-physical threats, like things coming in on TV screens or through public school curriculum, that there's spiritual warfare happening at all times. And so a dad is the one who steps between his children and his family and the threats and says, no, that is not going to happen. And he lays down his life.
Yeah.
He lays down his life to fight for them, which is a big thing and something new to us. Our children are all under three.
Yeah.
It's still a very new phase for us, but we see our world is father anemic.
Yes.
That it is just crying out for a good dosage of dad.
Oh yeah. Get a dose of a good dad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully I am a dose of a good dad.
That guy was a dose.
A double dose.
That guy was a lethal dose. So that's your criteria. Again, we have these 4 points. Fathers should seek their children's hearts, that they abundantly provide, they are masculine, and that they gladly assume responsibility and love, sacrificially laying down their lives for their children and their wives. And all the dads that we're looking at in this dad draft are gonna cover these ingredients.
Yeah. So with all that said, here are the rules for our draft. First, we're going to flip a coin, obviously, to see who goes first. And we're going to do snake order. So whoever gets first doesn't keep getting, you know, the best choice. If you're not familiar, snake order means Zach, let's say he gets picked first. I'm going to go second. That's round one. Round two, I go first. Yeah. Then you go second. Yeah. Round three, you go. You
I feel like it makes it way more sense if there's a 32 teams picking. But
still. Yeah, there's two here. But, you know, I don't want whoever gets first to get all the good dads.
The dad hog.
Exactly. So movies and television are what we're drawing from here. Anything's on the books, animated or not.
Mm-hmm.
No repeat picks. So I can't pick anyone you got.
Yeah.
Clearly. And then at the end, we're going to lay out our team of five. We're going to just give a brief summary, I guess. And I want us to pick a name on the spot.
Cool.
Based on our guys.
Pick a name for your team. I pick one for mine.
Yeah.
Nice.
Just a little fun improv, I guess.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Once we have our teams, you're going to see in the description of this episode, there's a poll at the bottom. You're going to get to vote for which team you think is best based on the biblical criteria, not on who's the coolest or the most interesting, but who you think is the most biblical team.
Yeah. You could vote on if you like Johnny or myself better. That's how I'm going to read the poll.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's who's your favorite host? No, that's definitely fine. Definitely the biblical side of things.
That's how I want you to vote.
And yeah, and if you have any thoughts on it and you disagree with our picks, because this is not an exhaustive thing at all. This is just the things that popped up in Johnny and I's research.
This is only movies that I've seen and shows that I've seen.
So same. I didn't try and push super hard. And there's a lot of ones that pop up on lists that you find online of just good dads, not necessarily biblical dads, that I think deserve to be on this list too, that I didn't go for. Same. You know, that in terms of the ones that I threw into the pool here. Again, not exhaustive. And if you have any thoughts or you get mad about our picks or whatever, or you disagree with them, we want to hear about it.
Yeah.
Hit us up at goddeservesbetter@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Or on Instagram at goddeservesbetter. Leave us a comment or whatever. We'll make a post about it too. So you can just.
Next week, we're going to post on Instagram who the winner is based on the votes.
Yes.
So you have a week to vote.
Yeah. You have a whole week to vote. Make those burner accounts and then do all your other illegal voting.
We know you guys care so much.
Yeah, exactly. Give us your feedback. We're super open to that kind of thing. We want to hear. Just prove me wrong. I don't care. but all in good fun. It's really to show you that biblical masculinity and biblical fatherhood can be depicted without being overt.
Yeah.
Or sometimes overt, and that's a good thing. It's just, it does depend on the story in a lot of ways. It does depend on the genre and the type of movie. I real quick wanted to tell you about the coin.
Yeah.
This is just a little bit of trivia. I've had this coin since, I'm assuming, 2005.
This is the coin that we are going to flip, by the way.
We're going to flip. It's a commemorative Star Wars Episode 3 coin.
Really?
Yeah, that's still in its little sealed...
Revenge of the Sith?
Yeah, Revenge of the Sith, which is kind of appropriate because Darth Vader is definitely not on this list. He's a child
Didn't
murderer.
Didn't think about him for a second.
No. He's cool, and he certainly redeems himself. And he's a dad, even though he shouldn't have been, according to the Jedi Order. But yes, he is.
And also just by character, I don't think he should have been a dad.
But. Oh, yeah. He takes no responsibility, and he really just shows up as a dad in the last 5 seconds of his life.
Yeah. Boo! You suck, Darth Vader.
Boo, Darth, boo! Johnny broke the board, and now it's just booing the whole time. Yeah, we're trying out sound effects on our board too, so we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, so I thought that was kind of appropriate. I am your father. You know, the guy who said that line. This is the coin that we are flipping for this. So
I guess Darth Vader is heads.
Yeah.
And who is this?
Obi-Wan and fighting. That's tails
on Mustafar.
Yeah,
the battle. Best lightsaber fight, by the way.
In all
9 episodes.
Yeah.
All right. You call it?
Yeah. Heads.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
It is tails.
It's tails. Okay. Did you bust my commemorative coin on the table?
Broken.
Oh, boy. No, I'm just kidding. It's not broken, people. It's so good. It's so salvageable. You can still find it on eBay for like $25.
You put it on eBay?
No, I'm just saying. Okay. Like they. It's the same like merchandise bloat that happens when big stuff like that
promotional
comes out.
Content.
Yeah. It's like, oh, great. This will be worth something someday.
$25.
Yeah.
Which I guess is more than you got for free.
Last year with inflation being like 15%, you know, and between now and 2005.
That's a drive-through meal. $25.
That's true. I'd rather just have the coin for this exact scenario. Anyway.
All right. So with that... I have the first pick in the dad draft, father face-off.
Oh, boy.
So, with the number one overall pick of the inaugural fatherhood face-off, I am selecting Atticus Finch from
Boo.
To Kill a Mock...
Boo! I don't even need to hit the board. Boo!
From To Kill a Mockingbird.
Why?
So, one of the biggest things about him, I'm going to read a quote, actually, from the movie. Something that he said to Scout. He said...
His daughter, Scout.
I remember when my daddy gave me that gun. He told me that I should never point it at anything in the house, and that he'd rather I shoot it at tin cans in the backyard. But he said that sooner or later, he supposed the temptation to go after birds would be too much, and that I could shoot all the blue jays I wanted, if I could hit them. But to remember, it was a sin to kill a mockingbird. Mockingbirds don't do anything but make music for us to enjoy. They don't eat people's gardens. They don't nest in the corn crib. They don't do one thing but just sing their hearts out for us. So that's kind of like the thesis of the book.
Of course.
Stated out.
The title right there.
Yeah, it's in the title. But basically, he was permitted to shoot birds except for the mockingbirds.
Mm-hmm.
I think he does a lot of standing up for the weak.
Yes.
He's a lawyer. And so he stands up for Tom Robinson. He's a character that was wrongly accused. And he's black in mm-hmm. a racist, I forget what state.
Alabama, right?
Was it Alabama?
Yeah.
He defends him even though he loses the trial. He shows that justice, integrity are what's most important. He stands up also for Boo Radley.
I love Boo Radley.
A young Duval, right?
Yeah, Robert Duval.
So Boo or Arthur Radley, he never harmed anyone. He was just like a recluse.
Lived next door,
kind of creepy.
To the finches,
kids were kind of afraid of him. Until in the end, they realize, like, oh, he's just a nice guy. He just doesn't really have a lot of, like, social skills, I guess, you know. And it's kind of like reflecting that, like, don't be mean to the people that outsiders are different.
Yeah.
You know, just because they're easy to shoot, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Gregory Peck, who's the actor who portrayed Atticus Finch in mm-hmm. the movie, won an Oscar for this.
Yeah.
And I resent him for that.
Really?
Because Peter O'Toole should have won for Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh,
but.
Yeah.
They say the way they put it is, you know, what
was film that supporting actor
is best actor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the way they say it is Peter O'Toole gave the performance of a lifetime, but Gregory Peck gave the best performance of all time.
Hmm.
And so for a best actor anyway, and that's like, you'll see it on lists online all the time, film historians and stuff that.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that was the best role of all time.
I'm just telling you what they say.
Yeah.
You know, that for the Oscar history stuff and. But Peter O'Toole went on to never win an Oscar. That would have been his year. But it just happened to line up with one of the
his
like,
honorary
most iconic...
award. It's kind of like Leo winning for The Revenant or something.
Oh, no. Peter O'Toole never won.
No, I'm saying for Gregory Peck.
Oh, no. He won because that was like people loved that performance more. It wasn't really? Just that it was a lifetime thing. Yeah.
I don't know. I stopped caring about the Oscars like a year ago.
Wow. It took you long enough.
2 years ago.
But... Yeah. Okay.
The year during like the height of COVID. That whole
oh sure, I feel like
that
the
was
whole Moonlight, La La Land thing.
Yeah, that was sloppy.
That was sloppy.
I didn't care about those movies. Yeah,
I was already hate watching at that point. Okay. I'm just like
when they put like what was it, Black Panther nominated for Best Picture?
Yeah,
I was like okay, Yeah. Okay, guys.
But it's always kind of been that way. I think people just don't realize that it's not been the, oh, we're celebrating the best films of all time. Like, they've...
It's all narrative.
Missed the boat. Totally. I mean, of course it is.
Brendan Fraser winning Best Actor.
Yes.
He's a bad father.
It's about the press. The whale. Yes, yes. The whale is a bad dad.
But anyways, back to Atticus Finch. Another quote that I really liked was by Reverend Sykes in the film. Mm-hmm. He says to Scout, "Miss Jean Louise, stand up. Your father's passing." He encourages Scout to stand up with the black audience in the balcony after hearing the verdict.
Yeah.
And so basically it was to show, when he said this, it was showing respect and reverence for Atticus, showing like that the community respects him. And so I think that's actually like a really big thing as a father. You need to be respected by your community.
I agree. I mean, it's a great pick. It's a great pick. I'm glad you snatched him up.
I could tell.
I knew he was there. I knew he was there.
Yeah. I could tell you probably don't want to take him.
No, I don't. Because
you booed me instantly. Started talking about the Oscars like 1 minute into it.
Yeah. Okay. I booed you. Yeah. Because it's, this is just the way that Johnny and I think, the differences between the two of us. I just really love to think outside of the box. Hmm. And that was one I kept running into. And I love that book and I love that performance.
I think it's my favorite book outside of like, a, you know, Father Hunger.
I devoured or like, it.
You know, American literature, fiction, you know.
100%. 100%. Harper Lee was one hit wonder.
Yeah.
And she didn't need to write anything else. It is great. And he is great in it. And he's quiet. He's reserved. You don't ever see him like lose his temper. I think that's a huge thing, especially in comparing him to sitcom dads or whatever. Sure. Losing your temper or being an idiot.
Yeah.
Being goofy.
He's the antithesis of that.
He's not even silly.
No, he's full of wisdom too. Like there's a lot of moral lessons he passes down, like put yourself in other people's shoes.
Yeah.
Is probably the biggest lesson in the film. But
that would actually be my one critique of him, is that he could be more playful.
Hmm. Yeah, he could be.
He's a little older. The way he holds
himself.
He's too
serious.
He's very serious. I mean, he's doing something very stressful.
I mean, he's a lawyer. He has two kids.
And he's a widower. So it's not like he's perfectly
balanced. Not a lot of fun going on.
No. It sounds tough. And they're poor too. So I get it. But that is one area that I think in terms of being generous with your kids.
Very true. You got to have a sense of humor.
You have to have a sense of humor.
Dad jokes are a thing for a reason.
I struggle as a dad to balance those things, being stern and being silly.
Yeah, but anyways.
It's a great pick. It's a great pick. He's going to do well for you. I think
number one overall
he's
pick.
He's a fan favorite.
Yeah.
And I think most people, both Christian and non-Christian, can agree. And I think that's actually a big thing, to live at peace with all men. Mm-hmm. Even in the movie, he has the respect of those who disagree with him.
Yeah.
He's still an upstanding man. And so nobody, even the racists in the town, they may resent him because of what he's doing, but they recognize
that to respect him.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
So,
very well put. You are up for the number two overall pick of the Fatherhood Face-Off.
So that for the number two overall pick in the Fatherhood Face-Off, Zach Lovelace picks Jonathan Kent from 1978's Superman.
Interesting. I thought about him.
Yeah.
And that was, I thought about prefacing adoption as it counts.
Oh, it totally counts.
As long as it's legal. I was getting into the weeds on like, oh, this person's like a father figure. That doesn't count.
Oh, father figures don't count.
Yeah.
Because there are plenty of really good father figures in films. And that could be a whole other episode, I feel like. But no, they formally adopt him.
They formally adopt him, yeah. Great pick.
You know, thank you. There's a whole long history of him in the comics. And so I was definitely researching a ton about him.
Great name too.
Oh, I know. Jonathan. Yeah.
What about from Man of Steel?
Oh, that's actually might be a little bit of a detractor for him. Although he's still good in that movie. It's just that movie isn't as good as the 1978 Superman.
No, I agree.
I actually started to really fall in love with Richard Donner's Superman while researching this. I've seen it, but he's portrayed by Glenn Ford, by the way. He's like a bigger American actor in the 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. I chose him because he lives a quiet life at strife with no one, which is similar to Atticus.
Yeah.
He instills, this is the biggest thing, he instills a moral compass into his son, which is Superman's true power. So you think Superman is godlike. He often is compared to Christ. He's a Christ-like figure, that kind of thing. Even in Man of Steel, he is. He's like, I'm 33 years old and whatever. Anyway, even though Jonathan Kent dies of a heart attack only like 15 minutes in, Sorry to spoil that for you folks, but
it's been how many years?
It's been like over 40 years. Yeah. It's fine.
Two dads in, but spoiler alert for the rest. Any dad we mention, we're probably going to spoil the ending of the movie.
Totally. Or what happens to them. This isn't the end of the movie. It's just important to Superman's formation. Even though you don't see Jonathan Kent the rest of the movie after he dies, you feel his presence in the hayseed of Clark Kent, the kind of good old boy from Kansas, simple, quiet life. And actually, in the comics, it's confirmed that he's a Methodist. And so he's confirmed Christian, which means Superman is confirmed.
Are we allowed to pull from source material, I guess?
I think, if anything, it's just spiritually there in the film.
I kind of did for some of mine, too.
So. Yeah, and some characters, that's just the nature of the beast. They go beyond. So people who had read it would recognize him. I don't think they would all think that he was necessarily a Christian. I actually was reading a lot on Reddit, and Reddit was... there's no greater hive of villainy and scum. But they seem to agree that Superman... Like, everyone agreed that Superman's character is amazing, and it was given to him by Jonathan Kent.
Yeah.
So I actually read a comment that like really got to me. Being Jor-El's son made him Superman. So that's Superman's biological dad. Yeah. Being Jonathan Kent's son made him a hero. And that just gave me goosebumps.
That's good. That's a good quote.
And that's just straight up a YouTube comment.
It's deep.
But it's true, though. It's true. The restraint, the meekness that you see in Superman, the approachability, the humility from being from a flyover state, you know, being just a Midwesterner, living out in the corn and farming and whatnot, and even being amongst God's people, that has formed Superman into who Superman is. And this is, I'm going to geek out here a little bit.
Okay.
I'm going to get into the movie stuff too, but Superman Red Sun is an alternative history. It's a graphic novel that was written where Superman lands in Soviet Russia rather than the U.S.
This doesn't happen in the movie.
This doesn't happen in the movie. I'm just saying this is just a separate comics thing to kind of further make the point.
Okay.
And he is a stooge in the Soviet army, and they use him for all sorts of things. And eventually he like takes over the world, and Lex Luthor, who's the president in this alternative history, you know, takes it
upon his
mission. Yeah. It's his mission to kill Superman still, but he's a little bit more justified because he's not a Soviet. Anyway, it's a very good graphic novel. I won't spoil it for you.
Showing what happens if he doesn't have his father.
Yes. If
Jonathan
he doesn't.
Kent.
Yeah. If he isn't part of that like crunchy middle America Christian nation, if he's not coming from there, then you have all the same superpowers and everything, but he's far more dangerous. And they try and get away with it. They kind of skirt that line of, oh, well, Superman's not bad because he kind of transcends it. It hurts itself. It hurts itself. I think it could have gone even further because that evil Superman is very popular now. You see that in Omni-Man from Invincible, extremely violent show, but that's what's interesting about it is it's like, well, what if Superman didn't hold back and was here to conquer in The Boys as well, the Amazon Prime. They're both actually Amazon Prime shows, but also extremely violent. I don't recommend either of them. And I have only seen like clips of them, but those two characters of Homelander from The Boys and Omni-Man from Invincible are this idea of Superman, Clark Kent, born outside
no
of
morals.
Amoral, you know, just doing whatever he wants, or Omni-Man kind of has one, but he just looks so far down on human life that obviously it's outside of anything that we recognize. But again, Jonathan Kent, canonically Methodist, he's wise. He imparts wisdom on a young Clark right before he dies. One of the quotes from the movie is that he says, "And there's one thing I do know, son, you're here for a reason." Which, again, there's so much hanging on that one line. He's trying to equip Clark for his life of service as a hero, knowing that he's exceptional. He's talking to him about like how you're good at football, but life isn't about football, basically.
Yeah.
Which I know we're doing a football-based.
This is about football.
This is about football.
Yeah, but not that.
But not that. And it's just an amazing scene. And you contrast that with the Zack Snyder version of Jonathan Kent's death, and which doesn't make any sense.
He just lifts his hand up or something.
Yeah, like, and he gets swept away in the wind or whatever. Yeah, and it's just to keep Superman a secret until he's ready. And it's like, you died to make a point.
I guess,
As opposed to, like, he didn't have to die. Whereas he dies of a heart attack. And he's just walking.
It makes more sense.
It makes more sense. It's way more tragic.
Yeah.
He couldn't have helped it. And that's actually to the point. It makes you identify more with Superman because then at the funeral, he tells his mom, he's like, all the powers I have, and there's nothing I could have done to have saved him. And that's something that emotionally Superman has to grapple with. So
it's been years since I saw that. I guess that's why I didn't pick it.
I want to rewatch it. Like,
I should too.
Begging Kate to watch it last night, and it's like only on rent for something.
15 minutes, but so much.
Oh, man, yeah. It's so packed. And so
it's quality over quantity with these guys.
Yes, yes.
Maybe Zach's guys. I think I went for guys with more screen time.
Mine is more of an argument from silence.
Sure.
So it's like he himself is not representative in the movie.
The effects of the dad.
Yes, the effects of the dad. And you see it in restraining the strongest character of all time. Hmm. That you gave him this moral code. And you got to think, it probably wasn't very easy to discipline a growing Superman.
Yeah.
Because there's actually...
You can't hurt him.
You can't hurt him. There's actually a couple panels of him spanking, I think, Superman and Superboy from like the from the 50s. Yeah. And he's like breaking the paddle. And he's like, how am I supposed to spank someone who has invulnerable skin? Anyway, it's
Kryptonite.
Like he clearly it means that Superman is truly saved and only Christ is actually working in his heart.
Hmm.
You know, like I know that seems kind of hacky to just throw that right in there, but... That's the only way, because you wouldn't be able to physically make him do anything.
You heard it here first. Superman, we will see you in heaven.
Yes, if you ever die. Yeah.
You have the first pick of the second round.
That's right, we're doing the Devil's Draft.
Yes.
So the next pick I choose is Gil Buckman from the 1989 film Parenthood. So for those who don't know this film, Superman was a little bit more mainstream. You kind of get what that movie's about, even if you haven't seen it. The logline for this is, four Buckman siblings attempt to raise their children, each in their own different style, and deal with the joys and sorrows that that process brings. It's directed by Ron Howard. It was written by Lowell Gantz and Mark Mandel. It stars a stacked cast, especially for that time. Steve Martin, Diane Wiest, Mary Steenburgen, Jason Robards, Tom Hulce, Rick Moranis, Martha Plimpton, Keanu Reeves, and Joaquin Phoenix.
Wow. I've not seen that movie.
It's very, very good.
Yeah.
It's very good. I see my marriage in the central characters, which is Gil Buckman and his wife, which I can't remember her name. But
who is he played by?
He's played by Steve Martin.
Okay.
Which I love Steve Martin. I love Steve Martin as an actor. I love him as a stand-up too, but he...
It's a little too crude for my taste, but...
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. He strikes this interesting tone. Because especially in this film, you see it. He leans hard into his comedic stuff, mm-hmm. but he also is very serious. And that was why I picked him, because he balances this out. He cares so much for his family. And he's actually, a central point in the film is he's trying to get a raise so he can provide more for his family. I won't ruin it, but it's family over career.
We already gave a spoiler alert, so you can ruin it.
That's fair. That's fair.
But if you want.
If you said you hadn't seen it. So,
I haven't seen it, no. You think I should?
I think, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. He's my second overall pick.
Yeah, that's right.
So Gil Buckman, there's a couple of scenes here. The biggest one that I think sells him in terms of his silliness, which we talked about this, being a form of generosity that he just gives himself. His son, who's I think like 8 or 9 years old, they hire a cowboy for his birthday party and the cowboy doesn't show. Hmm. And so Gil steps in and ends up having to take over and he becomes Cowboy Gil, as in guilty. You know, and it's goofy, it's over the top, but the kids are like eating it up.
Yeah.
And the whole time, one of the biggest conflicts is that his son, he's very anxious. He plays baseball and Gil coaches his team in hopes of like getting him to be less of a crybaby, basically, less anxious about things. He's on the point of being in special ed too, because he's gotten so much, he's like so hung up on things. And you see this dynamic play out in their marriage and whatnot, but he's just trying very hard to know his children and to provide for them and protect them as well. He has his father above him who's gruffer, he's meaner, he's played by Jason Robards, but in some ways he kind of taps into that wisdom at times, but he's got to keep him in check. There's this crazy scene at like a Chuck E. Cheese where Gil's son has been instructed to be polite, to be a good kid. He gets pushed off of this ride and he gets his money taken from him by this bully. And the grandfather says, you should go beat up the kid. He's not that big. And Gil says like, no, like you want me to handle it? And it just becomes this big thing. The kid starts crying and the whole restaurant starts looking at them. And as a parent, I can relate to this incredibly. And my kids aren't even that old. They're old enough to cause a scene though. but there's that idea that he's stern when needed and he's like fighting off the granddad. He's like, no, you need to take a couple steps back. He's protecting his child from the kind of overbearingness of his own father. And then there's the confronting in himself what he has given his child. They go on later in that scene and Gil and his wife are digging through the trash outside the Chuck E. Cheese because his son has lost his retainer, which is part of his freak out. And it's like $200 retainer. And they're digging through the trash. And he's like, where would he have gotten this
where would he have learned this from or whatever? And he's like obsessively washing his hands. Hmm. And his wife's like, I would have no idea, you know? And he, the scene ends with him just like kind of reckoning with that idea. That's like, I've given him the worst parts of me. Hmm. Knowing that is half the battle as a dad.
Yeah.
Like actually understanding that you are sinful and you impart not just your, you know, cosmic sin nature that your child hates authority and hates God just by their very broken mold that they're made in, but rather they inherit the very specific attributes of that from you. Mm-hmm. In the end, he sticks the landing and he helps his son. It's very realistic in its take. It's not like he just fixes him entirely.
Okay.
It's just there's little wins. Mm-hmm. And that picture of life and fatherhood, again, the movie's called Parenthood.
Yeah.
So you can kind of get the central theme.
Yeah.
But it's timeless.
Sweet. Great pick.
Oh.
It's your turn. I have the second pick of the second round. And I'm going to go with Ted Kramer from Kramer versus Kramer.
Oh.
My argument for him hinges on the plot of the movie, so I'm going to give just like a brief synopsis of like the issue. In the beginning of the film, his wife leaves him and his son.
Played by Meryl Streep.
Yes. The wife is played by Meryl Streep. Ted Kramer's
Dustin Hoffman.
Dustin Hoffman, yes. Hook.
Yeah.
And so he's left alone with his son, Billy. And basically the film...
Sounds like five-ish.
Yeah. Young toddler, older toddler.
Yeah.
And so the movie goes through him fighting for custody over his son, basically.
Mm-hmm. The wife comes back.
The wife comes back. Actually, the wife comes back in the third act. So I would say the second act is more so him just navigating fatherhood.
Yeah,
being a single father.
Yeah.
The wife who left him. One of the biggest things, I think, from the qualifications you mentioned, it was a sacrifice.
Mm.
One of the biggest moments that hit me really hard was he applied for a job and he's in the interview and he's like begging, like, I'll take this much, just going lower just to get the job. Cause it was like end of the year. They're about to go on Christmas break, this company. And he's just like begging.
Yeah.
He's begging. He throws out his dignity and everything for his son.
Wow.
I think that was huge.
He wants the job, and obviously he would want more money, but he's saying, like, I'll take less money if it means that you will hire me.
Yes. Right there. He needed to know right then and there, because it was time sensitive, too.
Yeah.
He needed to have a job in order to retain custody in the legal battle. And so he took the job, and there goes his career ambitions, basically, because of that. He stepped up in other ways, too, just being a father. Like, he learned to cook for his son. He became involved in the school. Another big thing I think is important is he knows when to apologize.
Mm.
So earlier on in the film, him and his son get in a huge argument. They both say they hate each other. And,
yeah.
And basically he just swallows his pride and says, like, that was wrong. I'm sorry. As a dad, pride is one of man's biggest struggles.
Yeah. Being quick to repent is a huge thing, especially repenting to your children.
Yes.
That's something that my wife and I talk about.
That's very humiliating.
All the time.
As a father.
Of course it is. And I can say that it's also very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Even at a young age, where you're like, hey, I blew up. You know, mm-hmm. I said something. I yelled. I'm sorry for doing that, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas I grew up in households that weren't like that all the time. Not
Same.
Saying it didn't happen, but being quick to repent is very fatherly.
Yeah. And then just the resilience he has in the legal battle and ultimately win. Thus the title, Kramer versus Kramer, him and his wife. But yeah.
It's a good pick. Whose pick is it now? Oh, it's me?
It is actually now my pick.
Oh, that's right. Because this is a deceptive draft. And
it's the devil's draft.
Yeah, the devil's draft. Here we go.
So I have the first pick of the third round. I'm going to go with James Braddock from Cinderella Man.
Oh, I've heard you talk about this.
Played by Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
A movie released in 2001. And he's the main character. He is a professional boxer during the time of the Great Depression. This is a true story, actually. Mm. One of the biggest qualifiers was the providing element.
Yeah.
During the Great Depression, he is forced to give up boxing just because it's not making enough money. I don't think he was doing very well either at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He has to take up work, has to wake up very early, stand at a gate for a job. They just hand out jobs like that to people waiting. And he either got a job that day or he didn't. And he worked very hard at the docks, operating machinery and whatnot. And he did that, put his life on the line. That's a very dangerous job. And he did what he had to do.
So was being a boxer.
Yeah, risking his life on both jobs to provide for his family. And then another thing, it says this on like a title card at the end of the movie. So this is kind of like going outside of the going into the source material, I guess. With the winnings from the final fight, he was able to buy a house for his family in New Jersey, where he raised his kids and stayed there for the rest of their lives.
Wow.
So he knew what to do with his money. He knew how to spend it on his family.
Definitely.
Incredible work ethic. He became a nationally renowned boxer.
Wow.
He trains very hard, and he's able to take down the world champion, Max Baer, who a big thing is that he actually murdered someone in the ring.
Well,
I don't know if you remember that.
I've actually never seen it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, spoiler alert for that, I guess.
Oh, no.
So he murders someone in the ring, and it's like a big deal. He's like risking his life again.
Yeah.
And he makes it a point to say, like, hey, I worked these jobs out there on the streets. Those people are risking their lives every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is nothing compared to that. And also, according to the title card, he served in World War II. So that's another big thing.
A lot of duty. Sacrificial. For sure.
The biggest sacrificial thing to me that gave me goosebumps was every day they pretty much have to ration their food because it's the Great Depression, no money. They get like maybe one meal a day, and it's breakfast. And so they all wake up, and him and his family are sitting around the table, and they're about to eat. And I think it was his daughter was hungry, and he says, you know, I had a dream last night. And in this dream, I ate so much. I had this delicious hamburger, and I had all this stuff. And I'm just way too full. I want you to have my plate.
Man.
And I was like, dang, I don't know if I could have done that.
I know.
And he just made it like fun for the kid, too.
Yeah, they get made guilt-free for them.
Exactly.
And they're like, oh, according to kid logic, my dad's full.
And you could see the wife like, don't do this, don't do that. Like, you got to train, you know, you got to do all this. And he's putting his health on the line, too, when he's working very physical jobs. And that was huge. He maintains humility throughout the film. He has a confrontation with this Max Baer guy the night before the big fight. He makes an inappropriate comment towards his wife, Max Baer does, towards James's wife, referring to how he murdered someone in the ring, basically says, like, you're too pretty to be a widow.
Oh, wow.
And James is like, hey, come on, man. And he keeps his cool. She throws her drink in Max's face.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, look at James Braddock. His wife is doing the fighting for him.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, ain't she something? And then he just walks away. And he has the level head in the fight. That was really good.
That is good, especially, I don't know about you, but I get fed self-defense stuff all the time.
Yeah.
We are in an era where it just, they know, that algorithm knows that that's something that
feed
I think
into
about.
That anger.
Totally.
And
just
defend
societal
your family.
Decay. You know, people thinking like, am I going to get mugged at some point? What would I do if a guy pulled a knife on my family?
I think that is actually super important. So, like, of course, there's you do have to physically defend your family.
Yeah.
But he was able to not have to.
Of course. And that's where, in most of those situations, you're going to want to just run away or talk your way out of it, give them what they want. You know, you're not going to want to sit here and actually fight them. But sometimes you might have to fight, and you should be competent.
Yeah.
And again, the protective nature of the father. You are protecting what matters most. I think there's a Chesterton quote that talks about soldiers and going to war, and soldiers don't fight out of hate. They fight out of love for what's behind them.
Yeah.
That's
a very good quote.
Yeah. That there's, for men, that is a chief duty. And you feel it. You feel the anxiety as a husband. I know you do too. Just in terms of, that's why I can't help but watch these videos of how to choke someone out or whatever, how to throw a good elbow.
Or you still need to have that in your arsenal.
You do. Well, yeah. You should be competent with your body. Even just having your head on a swivel and being paranoid, a healthy paranoia, I'll say. So, yeah, that's a good one. Being an actual fighter is very important.
In the third round of the Fatherhood Face-Off, Zachary Lovelace is taking
Chief Martin Brody from Jaws.
Nice.
So for those who don't know, Jaws is about a killer shark that comes and attacks a town in upstate New York, I think. And the main character is Chief Brody, played by Roy Scheider. And the film was directed by Steven Spielberg. It came out in 1975, was written by Peter Benchley, who also wrote the book, and Carl
Gottlieb.
Started
the summer blockbuster.
It did. It basically kicked off that whole thing. And my personal favorite movie. So
it's a good movie.
Kind of makes sense that I would look at it and examine it. I think it's interesting. There are three main shark hunters. There's Chief Brody, who's the chief of police on the island. So he's in charge of shutting down the beaches, gets in a lot of conflicts with the mayor and the Chamber of Commerce, I guess, in terms of keeping it open because it does a lot of business for the town. And then you have the seafarer, shark hunter, Quint. And then you have the scientist Hooper, the young kid. And Brody's the only one with children.
Wasn't it Dreyfus who played him?
Yeah, Richard Dreyfus.
Yeah.
There's this idea that he already has a policeman. He has integrity. He's protective, obviously, not just of the people who are swimming in the ocean, but all sorts of other crimes. And he has family over career, too. He cares more about his family than he does about looking good in the eyes of the mayor or whoever's trying to get him to corruptly keep the beaches open and whatnot. And then ultimately he faces his fears and he carries burdens in a kind of stoic way. Although he vocalizes that he doesn't like the water and that he's afraid, he does eventually saddle up. There's a John Wayne quote that says having courage isn't not having fear, it's being afraid and saddling up anyway.
Yeah.
That Chief Brody does this in the film. And
it's a great example of that.
Well, I think my favorite scene for him in terms of fatherhood, one is doing CPR on his own son after he goes into shock seeing a man get eaten in the bay. But it's after the Kittner boy is killed, the boy on the raft, and his mother, the Kittner boy's mom, comes up to him after they caught the tiger shark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The what? That's
the fake one.
Yeah. And
was it not a real shark that they had?
Yeah, the tiger shark, yeah.
It was an actual shark.
That's like an actual shark, yeah. I mean, they killed it. You
know. It wasn't actually Jaws is what I meant, but yeah.
Yes, all of those things. Brody's there celebrating. He's got the red necks. You know, everybody's thinking that this is the shark. Hooper tells him this isn't the shark because the bite radius, but it kind of gets overshadowed because the Kittner boy's mom shows up and she's just come from the funeral and she slaps Brody because she's like, you knew and you didn't close the beach, which obviously he's kind of strong-armed by the mayor. So he's not entirely at fault here, but he just takes responsibility for it. He doesn't argue with her.
Yeah, give an excuse.
He just takes it and he lets her let it out on him. You know, it's like, even though it wasn't his fault, it was his responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I think that's certainly huge. Something that I run into as a dad. I just love how the dynamic between him and his family, the dinner scene with his son, who's like mimicking him.
Okay.
He's mimicking the facial expressions and stuff, trying to cheer his dad up. And it does. That kind of quiet humor. He's playful.
Yeah.
And stern. I think those two things are
just... a good pick.
I know you're jealous. I know you wanted to pick him instead.
I wanted to know.
And don't pay attention to any of the sequels because it kind of tramples on all of this. But
sure,
as a self-contained unit, it certainly gets all of this done. So yeah, Martin Brody, I love him. And Roy Scheider does such a great job. He has such an approachability to him. Again, he has that playfulness, but kind of a stern face. Pardon me. How many more rounds do we have?
So we're going into the last round.
Okay.
Round number four.
Cool. So ultimately, we're going to both end up with four picks.
Correct.
That's what you're saying. Okay, cool. Well, both have four picks, and then we'll name our teams. This is just a little bit of an intermission here, folks. As this first, the Devil's Draft has got me all mixed up.
And so, with the first pick of the fourth round of the Fatherhood Face-Off, Zachary Lovelace selects...
Bandit from Bluey.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, that's such a good pick.
You've seen Bluey?
Oh, yeah. Okay,
good.
I have a young child.
That's fair. That's fair. You know, most of our audience probably hasn't seen Bluey. It's certainly something that when you have kids, especially toddlers, we're not like a TV forward family, so you're always looking for things that can be like, okay, you get one episode a day, kid.
It's a good show that plays in like public places, you know.
That's also true. It is family friendly. Yeah. So the basic idea of the show is it's a slice of life adventure with an Australian blue heeler cattle dog puppy named Bluey as she has fun with her family and friends in everyday situations. It was created by Joe Brum, written by Joe Brum and a bunch of other people. Stars Dave McCormick from the band Custard. I'd never heard of them, but what he was known for. Yeah. Has a very distinct voice, is the dad. And I also learned that the children go uncredited to protect
him. Yeah, I've heard of that, yeah.
Which, it's awesome.
Just keep them safe, yeah.
And not just like from press or anything, but just...
from being child stars.
Yes, know? Exactly. Yeah. It's just, that's so brilliant.
Media does not treat children very well.
No, and the show was created to be appealing to both adults and children. It's something called co-viewing. Kate has cried multiple times watching this show.
Oh, yeah. My wife has too.
Yeah. And it's not just because they're wives and they're more susceptible to that. There are, it's like,
yeah, I got a little, it knows
how to
do too.
It. Yeah. It knows how to communicate deep things, but that are also interesting. And
in
funny.
11 minutes, no less.
I know.
Yeah.
It is truly a feat.
Yeah.
And so it's a phenomenon.
Yeah.
Again, you'd have to be kind of under a rock or just be a single guy.
They just released a video game in 2023.
Did they really?
Yeah, you didn't hear about that?
No.
Apparently, I mean, it's a kid game, so it's not like...
That's fair, yeah. I would expect it to be, to capture the essence of the show, but there's just so many life situations that you see and that you think the show is going one way and then the episode's about something else entirely. And I can't even give you like a lot of examples. I would just recommend going online and watching.
Yeah.
But the dad, his name is
Disney
Bandit.
Plus.
Yeah, exactly. The dad's name is Bandit, but he also just goes by Dad. And he's very humble. He's extremely generous. He's very playful. He really is imaginative and plays into the, I think a consistent theme is that his daughters are very imaginative and he just plays into it and kind of lets himself be a plaything to them and loves his wife dearly. They don't really disparage each other ever. I don't think I've ever seen that anyway, like the parents. And he's also quick to repent. He's quick to say he's sorry if he does something wrong or goofs up or whatever. But yeah, it teaches big things indirectly via play, which is a huge child psychology thing. Instead of just directly telling them, and I know you're going to relate to this, but our audience might not. If you can't tell a kid to do something, but if you can make it into a game, if you can gamify it, they are all in, man.
Oh, yeah.
And it celebrates the magic of the mundane. This is a little bit more about the show, but the dad as well, because he's a central character, he celebrates the mundane and makes the mundane interesting. Most of life is mundane.
Yeah, a lot happens in the mundane.
Exactly.
And the foundation is built in the mundane.
And the concrete is poured for your children's character in those moments. Being a dad who's available. I think that's a huge thing. Being available, not being distracted. There was a Babylon Bee article, which kind of inspired this whole thing. Bandit was put up as like, a man wishes he was as good a dad as Bluey's dad.
That's funny.
It's like, yeah, that makes sense. That all tracks. But it spawned tons of like podcasts and blogs and YouTube channels that like love the show. Parents who are just
great role models.
It's
as parents. Yeah.
And so, yeah,
it's a rare thing to see. And so that's why I think so many people are clamoring over it. And
absolutely.
The fact that it's like so mainstream.
And it's clean.
Yeah.
It's clean. And in the age of Blue's Clues being gay and in your face about everything, I think a show that parents can watch together and they don't really have to worry.
Yeah.
It's everything.
Yeah.
It's everything. And it just goes to show you how, again, anemic our culture is for good Christian values when something that just doesn't offend anyone.
Yeah.
Like it just.
It's on the it's very surface level of terms of like what a biblical father is.
Yeah.
It's so.
He seems full of wisdom, though. He does tell his children lessons, and it's quite profound, I think.
Sure. But he's not like reading scripture for his family.
No, but he doesn't have to. That's kind of what I was saying about at the top. Like these people don't have to. These men don't have to. Be explicitly Christian.
Yeah.
But if he said a Bible verse, I wouldn't blink an eye.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of thing.
I would cheer if he did.
That's true. That's true. I mean, imagine if Bluey was a Christian show. I almost feel like that would take it down a notch.
It would become too over like Bible lesson or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and that's just that's not how my children learn. I don't like.
And also, what do you want them to learn? Like, just be patient because.
Yeah.
God says so. I mean, that is true, but like the way it's like shown in the show would have to be.
It would be contextual.
Yeah.
You would see why being patient is a good thing. It's not just purely that God says that it's good and it is. There are some things that are like that.
Yeah.
But there's also like being patient makes people want to be around you more.
Yeah.
You know, and it's actually a kind thing to do. Being impatient is just serving yourself. So anyway, Bandit Healer is awesome.
Strong pick. Last round pick.
I know. He's my running back.
Okay. Good to know. Now, I feel like he does toe the line a little bit, being a little too goofy.
He does. That would be the knock.
Yeah.
That's why he's the fourth pick.
Okay. That's fair.
He's a cartoon character, too.
That's true. He is a great role model, but I feel like there's times in the show where the kids don't take him seriously sometimes.
Yes.
Because they don't know if it's a game or not.
Yes. This is something I struggle with as a dad.
Yeah.
I come home, I play games with Virginia. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
But then when it's like we're out and about and she's running out into traffic and I say stop and she doesn't listen.
Yeah.
Because she thinks I'm playing a game.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That, yes, I get it. And you definitely don't want to be on that. You don't want to have that problem. But I don't, it goes back to the Gil Buckman thing. I think there is a way to manage it. He manages that better in that film.
Yeah.
The goofiness. Like he is cartoonishly goofy. Gil Buckman is in that movie. From Parenthood.
Yeah.
And Bandit is a cartoon, so you know it's got to be somewhat entertaining, but it's charming and you have your children's attention. Does he have their respect? That's another question.
Yeah, that's fair.
And that's certainly something that I think especially with littles, is hard.
It is hard.
Because I'll literally tell Virginia one thing and she does the exact opposite.
You are basically this guy.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to be him one day.
Yeah. Yeah, he already has like gray hair kind of speckled in his design. And I've got, oh, man, I got tons of grays, dude. Huh. I got tons of grays. Yeah. I mean, it's not like, I'm not Steve Martin.
No.
You know? But yeah, I have Virginia like pick out my grays. I'm like, hey, where are they? Count them. And she's like, one, two.
There's more this time.
Oh, yeah. Certainly stress related. Gray hair is a splendor of the old.
Yeah.
So I'm like, bring it on. Yeah. You want me to? I'd rather go gray early like Steve Martin than go bald.
It just looks good.
It does. Yeah, like even be like salt and peppery.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it's a good look.
My dad's beard went gray, but it started on, he has a butt chin. It started on one cheek. So he just had one gray ball, like a little bump.
Yeah, I would.
It takes time, obviously. Yeah. But then being fully gray, man, that's got to be so cool.
I wouldn't lust for my dark hair getting all those dyes and
even
whatever.
Going bald. Like I've
just shave it all off.
I know, dude. Like, there's something. No offense to the baldies listening. There's something really exhilarating. Like a bald guy is very intimidating.
Yeah.
And so if you just own it, I think when you go halfway and you're like insecure about having hair and it's thinning or whatever, that's one thing. Also the dudes that have like just the bald patch on the top, they've let it go, but they grew everything else out. That's actually kind of cool too.
I think it's kind of weird. I don't know.
Well, they're just like, shave it all off. They have, well, like
you gotta be one or the other.
You're not doing the comb over. I'm saying like guys that look like they belong at like Bonnaroo, you know, like they have long hair, but then they have the bald on the top.
I don't agree.
It's like
with
wild
that.
And kind of scary. You know, it's a guy with a pitchfork.
It's scary. It's definitely scary.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want that.
And I kind of like that. You're talking about self-defense. Like,
sure.
But that guy also
going is just, full bald is intimidating. I think it was a very interesting choice actually that they made Fletcher in Whiplash bald. They picked a J.K. Simmons character. I think if they had anyone with like hair and whatever, it wouldn't have hit the same way.
That's a really weird point, but I agree. I've never thought about that because J.K. Simmons is just a bald actor.
Yeah.
So it probably wasn't much of a choice, but.
No, I think it probably played like 50% of the reason why they picked him.
No, he's just an amazing actor.
He is an amazing actor, but like you have to look the part too. I'm sure there's tons of amazing actors.
Yeah, he started the short film. Fletcher. He started the short film version of it.
That's
too.
Right. They did do the short film.
So it's like he's like a character actor that would have been more accessible.
Like he's dressed in all black and black boots and bald, like and ripped. Like, oh, dude, we talked about.
I mean, the gray hair is the splendor of the old. So what does it mean to be bald? You know, it's just Stone Cold Steve Austin. You know, hey, I love Bandit Healy. He's my favorite dad.
The upset pick.
Yeah.
I can't do this.
Vince McMahon.
It's a great pick.
Thanks, buddy. Oh, the final pick in the 2023 Family Feud fatherly.
Fatherhood face-off.
Fatherhood face-off. Sorry.
Yes.
It's getting late.
Yeah. The what they call Mr. Irrelevant in the NFL draft. The last pick.
Oh, interesting. I would love to get picked last in the NFL.
Yeah, it's a whole thing now. And last year, they had Brock Purdy. He was the last pick in the draft. And there's like no one really relevant who's ever been the last pick in the draft in the NFL.
Except for him.
There's a kicker too, but you know, it's a kicker. There's like never like a main character.
Dude, I feel like I'm one summer away of working out and training from being a walk-on kicker.
Oh, yeah. I think about that a lot. Like I could be a long snapper or a kicker, make like what, seven figures, you know,
easily. I score the most points for my team.
Yeah.
I think about that. Like in terms of getting an Olympic gold medal, like what is the sport I can get into quickest that would ensure that I would do that?
Probably curling for me, a winter Olympic
curl. Sport. Curling is so cool.
It is cool. Super entertaining. I don't know why men are so like obsessed with curling, but
they're giant marble things. And the form of like
it just
how it gets
tapped
under the
into
knee.
Something that every man has or most
it's,
men
it's
have.
It's the finesse.
Yeah.
It's like golf. I prefer it over golf anyway.
Oh, for sure. I actually don't like golf.
I don't like golf at all, but golf is all about finesse.
Yeah.
It's just precision.
Yeah.
And I think that's cool. It's the precision sport. It's
and
like
it's on ice.
And,
you got
and it's
brooms.
On ice. Oh, dude. Yeah. They got to have a cooler name than brooms, though. I'm sure they're called something else.
Yeah. But the pose that the guy has with his like legs sticking out
behind
him.
And he like stays there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And the U.S. beat Canada.
Really?
They won the gold.
Is Canada
last
like
time.
The head honcho in that sport? Yeah.
All the cold weather sports, you know.
Well, and back to my Mr. Irrelevant pick.
Yeah, who's your Mr. Irrelevant? Mine was Bandit Healy.
I was going to go with Chris Gardner from Pursuit of Happiness.
But then Will Smith slapped Chris Rock and you changed your mind.
No.
Or Will Smith's personal life just bled into it so hard that you're like, I can't.
Well, it's a very similar route to Ted Kramer. I would honestly say his was more difficult in a lot of ways.
Oh, I agreed. Yeah.
Have you seen Pursuit of Happiness?
I actually haven't. But I've seen a lot of scenes.
Yeah. There's a lot of memes. There's one big meme with the please help with Will Smith crying. And it actually is him begging for help from I think it was when he was begging for an internship for the stockbroker. It's an unpaid internship.
It does have echoes of Kramer versus Kramer at that point.
It does. If you've seen the movie, you kind of get it. He's fighting for custody over his son, too. And he's just makes it to the top. He gets one of the highest paying jobs, being like a stockbroker on Wall Street, basically, from literally being homeless. So it's huge. A great story. True story, also. But to make things more interesting, to add some diversity to my team. In terms of how they are good fathers. I'm going to go with Tatsuo Kusakabe from My Neighbor Totoro.
That's a great pick.
Yeah. A little more obscure. It's from Studio Ghibli, if you're unfamiliar. Basically, it's a movie surrounding two girls. They find this imaginary Totoro, who's like this...
It's like a cat.
A cat, I guess, yeah.
Balloon
And they
thing.
Go on these adventures. Sounds negligent from the father's point of view. But a big thing that he does in what the whole... crux of the movie is his wife is sick and ill and in hospice and across the country, I believe.
Yeah.
And so they move in the beginning of the movie into a house that's closer so he can work and also take care of his wife.
Wow.
And so he's providing for the family and also caring for them. And I think that one move, he doesn't get a ton of screen time either, but that one move is huge.
Yeah. It goes back to the kind of character arcs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. A good dad probably wouldn't get a lot of screen time.
Yeah, that's a big thing. We talked about this before the episode, but that's the part about being a dad. You're not the main character anymore. It's time for you to build up a main character.
That's a great way to put it.
So you're the supporting role, which is, I was actually surprised when you said that Atticus Finch won Best Actor, not Supporting Actor.
I know.
So he shares the parenting duties, like the household maintenance and also the providing, so he has to play both roles. He's not divorced or anything. It's just
he's having
to step up,
Yeah.
His wife is not able to physically help. But luckily at the end of the movie, she gets better and they're a happy family. My one ding against him was that his kids are just going out playing with some imaginary creature.
He just kind of lets them. But that's a little
bit
of a
charm.
But
that's when he works. Yeah. That's when he gets most of his work done. So I get it.
And I don't even fully... I used to love Totoro as a kid.
Yeah.
Loved it. We'd watch it in the DVD player built into
the movie.
And,
what
the
time capsule.
Scene or whatever. Yeah. It is... But we just used to love it. And it has what I call kid logic.
Yeah.
It doesn't...
That's a lot of Studio Ghibli movies.
Yeah. Not a lot of plot.
I think it's one of the better, if not the best, Studio Ghibli movies.
Of that type. I think Princess Mononoke is better. I think... Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind is better, but that's way more plot. But it is, it's so charming. It's just
very childlike,
and
stakes are low, but they're also really high, I guess, with the the mom. We're not sure if she's gonna make it or not, but just the stakes of their everyday, the two girls,
It goes back to the mundane thing.
Yeah,
that the movie can be kind of boring, and I, as an adult, I go back and I'm kind of bored, but as a kid you're enthralled. The world is a magical place. And the mundane is full of magic.
It is.
It's almost things become mundane and they lose their magic. And I know that's the theme of every elf or whatever Christmas movie. Children see the world for what it is.
It's kind of like Bandit. He's he's playing into their imagination a lot of the time as well.
Yes.
Another strong feature.
Yeah, and you are teaching your children. This is something that Doug Wilson gets into. The empty chair at the table speaks louder than anything else. That if you aren't there, obviously, and the absence of you, they're going to long for you. That's the father hunger thing. That you ground them in reality. You really do teach them to navigate the good times and the bad times, really as a spiritual guide as well. The father is telling them the world is a magical place.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely a magical place. There's a book by N.D. Wilson called Notes from a Tilt-A-World that I've been meaning to read that kind of gets into the same thing, that you really don't realize how magical the world is. We've bought so hard into the Enlightenment thinking, so hard into science, that we've lost the magic. of what the world actually is. I think it's why it explains a lot of why people like conspiracy theories nowadays.
Yeah.
Like in a good way, it's that it makes the world a lot more interesting.
It does. It very much does.
To know that it's...
I don't know if it's magical, certain theories, but you know.
Well, people say that giants are still around.
Sure. I was thinking like the moon landing and like...
Oh, sure.
9/11 and all that stuff.
No, it's way more magical to know that it was an inside job. different podcast.
Yeah.
But yes, it is magical. There are demons. There are angels. The Lord made this. What is a tree? Like, what really is a tree? It's like wood that grows out of the ground.
Yeah.
And it soaks up the sun. It like sucks it out of the air. And that's how it grows. What in the world are we talking about?
Step back and like think.
Yes.
What is this?
Yes.
How did this just come to be?
Yes. And there's that sense of awe that is what we're really talking about there.
There's like certain creatures. Like, what the heck is an elephant? Like you think there's different like animal groups and families. It's just like it's got a trunk
or a mushroom. Big ears,
or a mushroom.
Wait, like they have their own fungi kingdom thing. I don't even know what's going on with that.
Yeah.
But
just marveling at God's
animal
creation.
Kingdom. It's like a park in Florida.
I can't believe it's still there.
Yeah. Restoring the magic, but keeping the eyes. Because you're looking at God and you see him as creator when you have that sense of awe that the world is very much alive and it's not just raw mechanical execution, which is what the materialist says it is. Yeah. It's just like your genes are telling you to do this, and this, and there's nothing you can do about it. That's just the way it is. And that's what that dog down there has, those genes, wood in that tree, the gravel, the sand, all of it is just abiding by non-thinking laws. I mean, yes, that is true, but what upholds those laws?
Yeah.
If they're immaterial, you're saying as a materialist, where can I find these laws of physics? Ooh, I don't know.
It's but, very good.
You know,
very, very true.
So there's a whole spiritual aspect in terms of leading your children as a father.
Tatsuo does not do any of that kind of
explanation. I know he doesn't. I know he doesn't. But that type of movie, I'm just saying Totoro as a movie does that.
He's very much into like playing into their games. And
he is,
showing like that. How magical the world is, like you said. So there you have it. Those are our teams.
Yeah.
If you want to recap your team for us.
Yeah, my team. Going backwards, we had Bandit Healer. I called him Healy a minute ago. Whatever.
I'm not Healy's.
Yeah. I'm wearing a pair of Healy's right now, actually.
You can't see it.
You can't see it. But
he is. I can verify.
Yeah, Johnny can see me.
They're brown.
They are brown. And they have the Cleveland Browns logo on them. The best team in the NFL. Johnny reaching for the boo. As a Steelers fan, he can't get enough of me. So we have Dad from Bluey. We have Chief Martin Brody from Jaws. We have Gil Buckman from Parenthood. And we have Jonathan Kent from 1978's Superman.
Great team. Stacked. I have Tatsuo Kusakabe from My Neighbor Totoro. I have James Braddock from Cinderella Man. I have Ted Kramer from Kramer vs. Kramer. And then my first overall pick, Atticus Finch from To Kill a Mockingbird.
These are both really good teams.
So, I've not been thinking of a team name this whole time, so I don't know really where I'm going to go with this.
Me neither. Don't think too much about it.
I'm thinking too much about it. I can't help it.
Well, what town are they from? Going to be from Pittsburgh?
No.
Does it go like that? Or are they just like...
I don't know.
Johnny
we
didn't
could cut,
think...
We could cut this
Johnny didn't think through this. No, we said it at the beginning. I think it'd be nice to...
We could cut that part out.
I got a name for my team.
Okay.
The Supermen.
Well, one of them's a dog, actually. Not a man.
Well, I mean, that's okay. Dog's man's best friend.
Yeah.
Boo!
Can't reach it fast enough. I don't know. I guess I'll go with like the Mockingbirds or something like that.
Okay.
Tie it into Atticus Finch.
Well, now you're going to make me break Atticus's one rule.
Okay.
My team is going to crush your team.
Yeah. You can't shoot us. He said not to. My first overall pick said you can't.
We're just going to kill you with our hands. Who's more intimidating?
That's not what we're voting on. We are voting on who do you think is the most biblically accurate father team.
Yeah. Okay.
So vote in the poll. It's in the description of this episode. You can see it. And next week we'll reveal who the winner is.
Yeah. And again, if you have any other suggestions for dads who should have made the team, should be bench warmers, or maybe we should get into our bench warmers here.
I got a few honorable mentions, just so that you guys, if you're, I can't believe you didn't mention this guy. I mentioned Christopher Gardner from Pursuit of Happiness. True. I think he would have been really good, but I just had another person just like him.
So you mentioned him. He's a bench warmer of yours. I'll go with one. Mr. Incredible.
I thought about him.
Bob Parr.
I don't know.
It certainly, again, goes back to the main character dad problem. Yeah. You know, he's certainly
toying with cheating on his wife.
And, yeah, I don't, well, I don't know, think he's like,
with that one character.
He's flirty, but I don't think he's like thinking about cheating on his wife. I think it's just that he's more enamored with himself.
I think so too. And his aspirations over his family.
Yeah. And the whole idea is the story of the family coming together to become the Incredibles.
Yeah.
Not just Mr. Incredible. So
it's a good bench warmer.
Yeah, that's my point. And yeah. The Incredibles is the best Pixar movie of all time.
Yeah.
There's really nothing better.
I agree.
See? Fully. Exactly.
Yeah.
You can fight us in the comments. It's fine.
As an animation enthusiast, I can.
Yes.
I agree.
Yes, I agree.
As a story enthusiast, you agree. So.
Oh, yeah. Brad Bird, man, Incredibles 2 should have never happened.
No.
He's like, I'll write one when the story's good enough. Dude, you should have kept waiting. You should have kept waiting.
Yeah.
That's great. That's a great bench. I feel like both of us have great teams. We have the Mockingbirds. Again, we have the Supermen. Please go vote, as well as drop us a line. There's so many more dads that we didn't mention, and I'm sure that we don't even know exist, but we'd love to hear it.
GodDeservesBetter@gmail.com.
Yep.
Let us know.
Let us know, and then, again, comment on any post wherever you might follow us. Instagram is probably going to be our biggest place that we look at, but we have other socials. Yeah. We don't have a subreddit yet, though.
You'll see it all in the description of the episode.
Yeah. All right, Johnny, that's it for the first season of God Deserves Better. He's rushing for that button. Woo! Oh, you meant to hit the boo.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Wrong button.
So, yeah, that's the first season. If you've gotten anything from these discussions, please share the show, I think would be the big thing. We are speaking again to Christian filmmakers, and if you have any thoughts about anything we've said, we want to talk about it.
Yeah.
It's an open discussion. We really do want it to be more of a collective here rather than
we're still going to be working, even though there's going to be a hiatus till season two.
Yes.
Please send us any script ideas you have, anything you want to bounce off of us.
1,000%.
Yeah.
If you have a question or even a film that you want us to take a look at, we'd gladly do that. Give our thoughts on it. Tacking on to that, if you have any ideas or scripts that you want notes on, I, as a writer, would love to do that for you. I'd love to start a dialogue again with our audience, whoever you might be. Shoot us that, or even a short film that you've made. Because we've talked a lot about making your own short film. If you do end up making one because of this, reach out to us.
I really want to see it.
We want to celebrate.
I mean that earnestly.
We will share it on all of our stuff. Please send it our way. Yeah. One of our big goals is to function as a hub for Christian creators. That's literally everything from writing, directing, editing, you know, everything you can imagine.
Animating,
music. Yeah. On that note, if you need work, shoot us a message and we'll try our best to catch you a gig, especially in the Southeast. We're in the metro.
We're in the Atlanta area. Yeah.
So, you know, that is a little bit of a pop in place. And one more major note, this show wouldn't be anything without its sonic identity. Each piece of music that you've heard this season was written and performed by composer Hannah Osmond Scheidt. And you can find her in the show notes. We're going to link everything anywhere that you can find her there.
Social media handle.
All that stuff. Yeah, she's just done an amazing job giving us an identity. So
thank you, Hannah.
Thank you, Hannah, very, very much. And thank you guys for listening. Let's get out there and work heartily for our good and gracious God, the Redeemer of men. Thank you for listening to God Deserves Better, a production of Pemmican Studios.